Hi, my name is Ken. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ken!
Good-looking group, I'll tell you that. I'm real, real happy to be here. I want to thank everybody on the committee who got me here. And you know, who was in charge of the baskets for the rooms?
Maya.
I love you, Maya, wherever you are. Usually you go to places and they give you stuff that would kill you. Bananas, apples, oranges, you know. This time we had Oreo cookies and peanuts. And you know, stuff that kind of makes the lint in your navel go crazy. Like. I want a banana, I'll go to the grocery store, you know. Like. It's great being here. Thanks to all the committee, whoever you are. I mean, it takes a lot to put this thing on. I realize that. And, you know, there are a lot of weekends when I get an opportunity to go out and visit with folks somewhat like you. and I get a chance to listen to the other speakers who are there. And, you know, without adding anything to this, it's just the fact that this weekend, each and every one of the speakers, Peggy starting Friday night, and then Liz and Sally and Albert today, we're right on where I'm at. You know, they're right on where I'm at. Now, I don't know whether that means we're all real, real sick or whether we all just somehow got to the same place at the same time. But I had one of those weeks. Father's Day is tomorrow, and this has been a real emotional week for me, and it's been like an emotional roller coaster for a couple of weeks. Father's Day was never one of my best days, never one of my best days. My own dad died on Father's Day, and he walked from one room into another, and he fell down, and he started shaking, and when I picked him up, or tried to pick him up, he was dead. And I was just a kid, and he was a drinker. And I thought, geez, you know, I would never do this. Never, never do this. And my sobriety date is July 5th of 1970, and in a couple of weeks, I'll have 22 years in the program. And I was reflecting on the fact that a couple of weeks before I came to AA, I had gone to a party with my wife, and it was Father's Day. And well, actually, the next day was Father's Day. It was a Sunday, and this was a Saturday night party. And I got my usual drunk, and forced my wife in the car because she didn't want to drive with me going home. And on the way home, she jumped out of the car on the freeway. And I didn't know she was gone. The door started smacking back and forth, and I didn't know she was gone. And when I found out she was gone, I turned around and went back, and in that hazy state you can be in, make a long story real, real short, somebody else had picked her up, taken her to the hospital. And the next day she was released, Father's Day, and she said she just assumed I wouldn't be there when she got home. And so my kids who had gone through, you know, as Father's Day stuff they do in school, had made these gifts. And here I was going out the door, and these kids were trying to give me this stuff they had made in school. My one boy at the time was 9 years old, and my other son was 7. And it was like a real traumatic thing, and it hit me that that's exactly what I had gone through, you know, saying I would never, never do that. So, like, to be here tonight and to be all charged up, and then this week I got a chance to go see a gal in the program who I just love, and I saw two or three guys that I sponsor, and their kids graduated from high school, and I got a chance to go to the high school stuff. And God, the kids say the same crap now they did when I was getting out. We're the future, we'll change everything. But it was nice because this gal is a single parent, and she raised these kids. And it was like this big emotional commitment she made to them. And these other guys, two of them had not lived with those children while they were being raised. They were separated and divorced, actually. And they were there, and like we all were crying. They started playing Pomp and Circumstance, and it wasn't like the deal of the night, you know. It was like real, real emotional for me. So I'm just real, real happy to be here. Now, the stuff that happened tonight was really great, right before here, the singers, the dancers. You know, you get a lot of sick people together, you get sick results, you know. Like, like an advertisement for County Mental Health. If you want what we have, you come here. And I was listening to the songs, and they all were great songs with great words. But, you know, I was reflecting again, like when I was out drinking, those were not the songs I was dancing to. You know, I was dancing to songs like, I'm just 2 six-packs away from loving you, you know, like, I used to kiss her on the lips, but it's all over now, you know. And then my personal favorite, throw a saddle on the stove, Mama, I'm riding the range tonight. So that's the kind of stuff, you know, I was doing. You know, Sterling, who's very, very sick but getting well, you know, that was good to see. People involved, people laughing, people having a good time. If I was a newcomer, that would attract me. You know, I wouldn't be attracted by someone who had a face look like a hemorrhoid, you know? You know, like, that would not be my personal attraction, you know? And I don't know how, sometimes I go to meetings and I hear people say these things, like, you know, they say things like, well, there's us in here, and there's normal people out there. Watch my lips. There are no normal people. None. Just folks that haven't shared with you. You know, like, and in this country, all you got to do is look around, you know. We live in a country where the guy who's leading in the presidential polls hasn't even announced yet. I mean, sometimes I wake up, I think, is this Guatemala? What happened here? You know, I spoke at a high school the other night. There was a sign in the gym. It said, anyone caught hanging on the rim will be suspended. No kidding. Yo, wow. You know, wow. Woo. You know, oh, yeah, this is serious. You know? I flew over to Oklahoma. They got 2 airports in Oklahoma. One's called the Wally Post Airport, and the other one is called the Will Rogers Airport. They're both guys who died in plane crashes. Get serious, you know. You know? That's like having a Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, Big Bopper getaway weekend, you know, like, you know, like, yeah, woo! You know, is this amazing or what? You know, I got through school totally unscarred by education. And so, you know, like, so I know I'm not the brightest bulb in the room. And, you know, and I got sober with guys and I hang out with guys. You say, how long are you sober? We go. And looking at the events of the past few weeks, some of them think they're vice presidential material. Like, yeah, let's do it. You know, let's get out there and do it. But those are the kind of guys I hang out with. They're real. You know, I took a guy a couple of months ago to get bowling trophies. These are the kind of guys I hang out with. And I took him to the trophy shop. And he walked in and he says, wow, Ken, is this guy good? You know, no. No, Lewis, he makes these. Oh. And those guys can stay sober, you know why? Because when they read the big book, they read the big book. Is that an amazing thing? They read the big book. They don't imagine stuff, they don't project stuff, they don't analyze, they read what's in the big book. And the big book was written for guys like this. Really, guys like me. You know, it's kind of vague in areas, like, you know, you can go into a bookstore today, pick up all kinds of paraphernalia relating to alcoholism, you know. More and more about less and less until you know absolutely nothing, you know. And the big book says it best, you know, it kind of sums it up. It's very specific. It says, when the alcoholic drinks, something happens. So the newcomer says, well, what if I'm an alcoholic and I drink? What will happen? Something. Let's keep it simple. You know? And when I drank, something always happened, you know? I'd like to tell you about a lot of it, but I don't remember it, you know? Had I known I was going to be held accountable to relay some of this stuff later on, I would have kept notes. And some of the stuff I remember most vividly never happened. So, you know? So what I know is a very narrow perspective. And it happens to be mine. You know? And it's like, this is good. You know, this is good. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I understood that something happened. A lot of times, I don't know about you guys, I would stop for one drink. Do you ever stop for one drink? Just one. I don't think so. You look like a last call kind of crowd, you know? You know? And I would go in and I would have one drink. And I would order a drink. And at one end of the bar would be this guy. And he'd be a nice guy. And he'd look like a nice human being. And I would send him down a drink because I just liked him. And at the other end of the bar was, you know, my kind of gal. You know, she had more, I guess, makeup on than a burn victim. You know, like a... And she looked like she was in a hatchet fight and everybody had one but her. You know, like... And then I would make the incidental mistake of ordering a second drink. And somewhere in the course of the evening, I would be pounding on the guy who I liked with the nice face because he was coming on to the ugly gal who was now my date. You know, like, that's the way it happened with me. And it happened like that over and over and over and over again. So when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and they said, something happened. I understood that. I understood that. And I learned to listen here. Learned to listen here. Because what you think you hear isn't probably what you really heard. You know? Because you're hearing what the guy said and that's not what he really meant. So, you know, you got to listen. The best time to listen is when no one's talking. That's when you'll get the real best information. You know, it's like the guy who was 80 years old and he went in and he had a physical. And he went through the physical and the doctor looked at the results and he said, my God, he said, you got the body of a 50-year-old man. Must have been an alcoholic. He said, well, thank you, doctor. He said, I'm 80 years old. And the doctor says, my God, you got the body of a 50-year-old man. And the test results here of a 50-year-old man. So he went out to pay the nurse and he paid her. And he said, excuse me, miss, how old do you think I am? She looked at him, looked at the test results and said, I'd say you're about 50 years old. He said, I'm 80 years old. She said, well, you sure don't look 80 years old. So he paid the bill and he's walking out the door and there's an 80-year-old woman sitting there. And he walks over to her and he said, excuse me, miss, how old do you think I am? She said, come here. Walked over. She unzipped his fly. She put her hand in, left it in there for about 10 minutes, took it out and said, you're 80 years old. At her and he said, how did you know that? That's amazing. She said, I heard you tell the nurse. You know? So, so listen up. This way you'll know stuff in advance, you know? But that's one of the big reasons I love to come out and do these kind of things, and you've heard me say this before, is I love to hear people laugh. You know, I just love to hear people laugh. Peg said it well about, you know, it just kind of opens you up. Your thing here, enthusiasm, means God-filled. You know, that's the only thing I looked up before I came here. I thought, I was going to tell these guys. I told the guys in the group, they said, yeah, can you read it? You know, I'll take it over there. Then I got here and you got a banner, so it's no, you know. But it means God-intoxicated, God-filled, enthusiastic. And that's what this is about. This is about getting God-filled. You know, today there seems like there's an awful lot of surface cottage industry real close to AA, pretending to be just like us, you know? It has nothing to do with us, but they pretend to be just like us. Things like creative suffering, you know? And you know, you know? Yeah. And when you stand back from that, and that's what AA is, it's standing back. As you're here longer, you'll realize that the picture of life that exists is much broader than you ever thought. And what AA does, it's a fade-out shot. It pulls you back, and it's more and more and more and more panoramic as you go on. It encompasses everything. And you say, wow, that stuff was there all the time. I just didn't have the eyes to see it. Now I can see it. Now I can see it. So the deal is that I was with this spiritual retreat master a couple of months ago, and he introduced me to a word that I love. I love it because in my group it's a big word. It's called ersatz. E-R-S-A-T-Z. Ersatz. And ersatz is all the stuff that is real close to AA. And ersatz means substitute. Not the real thing. Substitute. Replacement. And ersatz, in the spiritual sense, is anything that takes the place of God, is ersatz. It's a substitute for God. People who want to get close to the fire but don't want to get burnt. And that's what happens in all this stuff. You watch people run around, and what they're involved in is a substitute instead of focusing on the one who has all power that our big book talks about. They want to get involved in all this other stuff. They want to water weeds, you know? A flower would scare the shit out of them, you know? Don't interfere. I may get help, you know? And the book says it real clear, even for guys like me. It says, there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. It doesn't say yesterday. It doesn't say tomorrow. It says right now. And no matter what went on, and I'm not trying to diminish people who were abused and all that kind of stuff badly as children, but no matter what happened to you, I don't care what it was. If you're in this room today and you're a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, it did you good. It got you here. It got you here, you know? And the only thing that will allow you to go forward in wellness and health is to forgive that stuff. Get rid of it. The book says it. I don't know what book people read. It says we know that we were somewhat at fault, you know, in some of this stuff. The book says we look at where we were at fault, not where somebody else was at fault. And it talks about the actor. And what does the actor say? I know I'm somewhat at fault, but I'd rather blame them and them and them and them and them. And particularly that guy over there, you know. And they spend their whole life going around blaming people. You know, we have a good thing in our group. We say, roll up. Get a life. You know? These are guys who go. And some of them are from New York. They say, hey, yo, get a life, you know. And that's what it's about. It's moving on. It's moving on. And it's having some fun. And it's getting rid of my invention and getting back to God's creation. Not the me that I invented, the God that was created. You know, the guy who came into the world. And I love the way the book says it. It says like things like, you know, surely this must be the answer. Self-knowledge. That's what these folks think. But they don't read the next line.
But it was not. But it was not. You know, but it was not. You know?
You know? It just isn't that way. And it's about getting on with life. And that's what I see you guys doing here. And that's a real, real exciting thing for me. That's what I want to do. I want to live life. At the other night at the graduation, some little kid, 18-year-old kid who hasn't even been out of the classroom yet, said, life is really all about not the time you get, but what you do with the time you have. And I said, wow, 18 years old, I didn't know that till I was 50. Don't you love it when somebody like that little, you know. It's like a newcomer telling the sponsor, read the book, you know. You want to question his ancestry, but you know, he's right, you know? And that's what this is about. We have a book for $6 that gives us the answer. It states the problem, gives us the answer, and tells us how to go about doing that. Suggested steps, working the steps, taking the steps. I mean, I hear so much semantic crap anymore, I get confused myself. The only time I really get confused about the steps is when I go to a step study, you know?
Well, I heard at the center.
Yeah. I just want to say this. In 1990 in San Diego, factual, we had 12 hospitals that had alcohol and drug recovery units. We now have 3. So if your recovery was based on their aftercare, sure hope we have that insurance, honey. Because you're in deep poo-poo. You know? And you watch them get into these intellectual arguments about nothing, you know? Thank God we don't do that in my group. Nobody has an intellect, you know? We're too busy doing stuff. Guy the other night, you know, he was talking about, you know, what he had to do. And, you know, the nice thing about our program is if you ever get confused about what you're supposed to do, you go work with another alcoholic. Is that simple? I mean, the book was written for us. This is all about loving God, finding God, loving everyone in God, and getting on and doing service. Service is the price you pay for being a human being and a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the rent. The rent is service. It's not about what's going to happen with your life. You're going to screw it up, I'll tell you in advance. You know? You're going to have your best ideas. Oh, it's a good one this time. You know? You know? You know? Selling hearing aids over the telephone. Ooh, I'll make money now, you know? Ooh. How about liver on a stick? Ooh, that sounds like a winner, you know? I mean, that's what you watch people do. So to avoid that kind of conflict in your own personal life, we have you come to meetings, go do service, and as your little sign says here, AA is a way of life. It's not a way of stagnation. It's not a way of regression. It's not a way of giving up. It's a way of living life, getting on and living life. This is it, folks. This is not a dress rehearsal. A lot of people, you know, didn't make it today. The curtain came down on them. There's a lot of people who died this morning. They missed a hell of a show tonight. You know, they missed a nice day. And maybe some of them were saying, maybe I'll go, maybe I won't, maybe I'll go, maybe I'll... You're not going. You did. Took that decision right out of your hand, you know? And it's about getting involved and noticing everything. I notice everything now. I never noticed anything. I noticed the people on 2020 all wear glasses. You know? I'm like, ooh. I picked up a Sara Lee pound cake the other day. It weighs 10 and three-quarter ounces. You know? You know? I just notice all this stuff, you know? You just pick up on it, you know? You're living life. You're noticing stuff. You know, I do very complicated things. When someone rings my doorbell, I go to the door. I don't want to scare the newcomer, you know? But I go, and when my phone rings, I pick it up. Is this amazing? I go down the road, and I get real excited because I see bumper stickers like, you know, Friends of Bill W. I love that. I don't know whether they are a friend of Bill W. or they bought the car from an alcoholic or what. But I drive by and I feel better because I saw that sign. I go by and I look and I see if I know who they are. And if I don't, I say, oh, that's okay. They're probably newcomers, you know? Or they're trying to get sober, whatever the deal is. And then I see other bumper stickers, which makes me appreciate Friends of Bill W. You know, bumper stickers like, keep hunking, I'm reloading. You know, like, oh, yeah. Oh. Just passing, you know. Yeah. I hunk like they're a friend. Beep, beep. Yeah. But I mean, that's what's going on. And you know, sooner or later, you come to the realization here that we all swim in the same water. I don't care what your background is. I don't care what you look like, what your pigmentation is. We all swim in the same water here. And the idea is not to pollute the water we swim in. It's a real simple process. And it's not about figuring out what's wrong with the other guy. You know, you've got enough work at home. You know? Don't you love it when someone's trying to figure out what's wrong with her? I think it's you, you know? You know? That kind of a deal. And getting on with life. And having a good time and laughing. And you know, when you laugh, we know this now. This is factual stuff. I didn't come by this accidentally. This has took a lot of depth research. When you're laughing, you produce endorphins. And endorphins are real healthy for you. They help fight pain. They give you more oxygen. You'll live longer. 6-7 days, maybe. You know, like...
The data isn't in yet. I really just made that up.
But that's the deal. You know, you get out and you live. And now they find out endorphins, you know, the laughter that you do produces as much endorphins as sex and jogging. So if you can get a partner to go jogging with you and have sex and laugh, as Hans and Franz would say, that meter would go way over here, you know? That the little baby go humming over there, you know? Like, that's the deal. You know, I came from an Italian neighborhood, and I picked up a lot of words in Italian. And Peggy was talking about painting. And there's a great word. It refers to the old painter, something that happened. Sometimes one of the old Italian painters would paint on a canvas, and he wouldn't like it for whatever reason. So he would paint over it. And the word they used is pentimento. Pentimento. It means the artist repents. He sees it differently and wants to do it differently. And that's what recovery is all about. The individual repents. We look at what we did isn't what we want. So now we get a chance to take whatever colors we want out of our little color box and paint. And we can make any color we want. We could make it all bright stuff. Or you can do dull stuff, you know, if that's where you're at. But it's your painting. And, you know, it's your deal. You know, and that's what life is. Life is an empty canvas, and you put on it what you want on it. And it has nothing to do with what the other folks are doing. It has to do with what you're doing. That's where the focus is. You know, the thing that sums up this whole program for me is, and this is when I think you're really free, happy, joyous, and free, is that no matter what the problem appears to be, if you can say to yourself, and hear yourself say this, this is a spiritual problem. This is a spiritual problem. It dresses up in a lot of different clothes, but the problem is spiritual. It's a malady I have. And when that spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. I don't know how many people I know today are running around trying to find an answer when the answer is right there. It's because the answer costs $6. You know, I have people who are going to seminars on how to endure pain, you know. Yeah, I got it. I want to keep it, you know. I'll pay somebody $1,000 to find it, you know. I think I'm losing it, you know. And it's like, whoa. Why don't you just do this stuff? Why don't you just simply do this stuff? And then you get a chance to grow. And you get a chance to see things very different. I don't know how it is here in Nebraska, but there for a while, thank God it's changed. But denial used to be, if you were happy, joyous, and free, you were in denial. You know? In our area, we call that recovery. You know? People confuse denial with recovery. You know? Like, yeah. I'm a compulsive everything, you know? Yeah. I'm like Al, you know, my logo would be excess is not enough. You know, let's get it out. Let's take it apart. Let's do it, you know? I was never one of those guys that said, let's write about it, you know, let's talk about it, you know? That's why I never did good in school. They have a thing in school called educationally ready, you know? Did you ever hear that term, educationally ready? That means that, you know, you study, and then the test is coming, and you're studying, and you're getting the information, and you're reading, and you're getting ready, and you're working. That was never me. I was running numbers, you know? I got educationally ready the day of the test. Give me your paper. Let me see what you've got. Yeah. What's the capital of New York? Oh, but yeah. I'm educationally ready now, you know. That's how I got educationally ready, right on the spot, right in the moment. You know, this preparation stuff wasn't my deal. And school was so confusing. They would have things like vowels, A-E-I-O and U. A-E-I-O and U. And sometimes Y. How come sometimes? You either give it to me all the time or don't give it to me, you know? Did you ever sit there and hear that kind of stuff? What's the I-E rule, Mr. Devaney? I don't know. E. That's the IE rule. E. And she'd say, I before E, except after C. Yeah, what happened to leisure and seizure, you know? That's the way I thought, you know? And then I would copy what somebody else said. She would say, we're going to do plurals today. And the kid in front of me was always bright kids. They put me in those Blue Jay groups, I think, you know? And she'd say, like, okay, give us a plural for the word ox, and then a sentence. And this little kid in front of me would say, oxen. The oxen are plowing the field. She'd say, Mr. Devaney, give me the plural for box. I'd say, boxen. I went to the A&P and I picked up 2 boxen of donuts. You know? And I thought I did good because I used the same rule he used. Yeah, you know? And that's why I was always confused. I didn't know any of this stuff. I mean, I was hanging out with guys who were saying, did you get all the numbers? Not did, you know, how well are you doing in school, you know? Wasn't that kind of a way? And then I came here, and Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, when you're going somewhere on a journey, they have this thing now, you can get it through AAA, the other A. And it's called a triptych. And you just tell them where you're going, and they tell you what roads to take, and it tells you everything. And AA has not worked like that for me. I've learned the way on the way, you know? Day to day, I've learned the way on the way. And what I thought would work yesterday doesn't work today. And what I thought would never work is doing real, real good for me. And I got kids who keep me right in the moment, you know? I was up to visit my son who lives up in Seattle. He's now 31 years old. I got a little granddaughter. It's a trip, I'll tell you. And I said to him on his birthday, I said, you know, you're 31. It doesn't seem that long ago, you know. I was in my fatherly role. You were wet in the bed and just a little baby. He said, Dad, doesn't seem that long ago you were wet in the bed. You know, like, you know, like. And you feel like saying, thanks for sharing, you know. But, you know, wonderful things happened to me ever since I've been sober. A lot of times stuff was happening and I didn't know it was happening. I didn't know it was happening until after the event. I didn't know I was staying sober until I looked back and I had been sober. I was so busy doing stuff. As was mentioned here by all the other speakers, I came in at a time where there was a lot of active old-timers. And you know, you did things. It was like, in New York, we didn't call them 12 steps. We just didn't. I came from a neighborhood, they said, go put the hit on this guy, you know? We know what that meant, you know? Like, go put the hit on, Ken. So we take this little bozo to a meeting. You know, you have a big problem in your life, like, you know, you're not doing too well at home or you're worried about the job, and then you pick up some shake and bake, you know, and he feels nauseous. Suddenly, your problem isn't at home, you know. It's not the job. You know, it's like, oh, please, baby God, get me there. You know, don't let him do this to me tonight. You know, like, you know, the problem is altogether different. So it lets me know that it's all perceptional. It's not what's happening. It's what I think's happening. The book has a great thing in the back. I haven't heard it in a long time, but there's a thing called the medical view. And some of you may read that. It's right behind the spiritual stuff. And there's a quote there by a Dr. Bauer. Great quote about Alcoholics Anonymous. And he says it works because sometimes, I love that word sometimes. These guys know exactly who they were dealing with. Sometimes it helps them avoid excessive concentration on themselves. I mean, excessive concentration. Ooh, that's my inner child. Woo! <You know? laughs> Woo! <You know? laughs> Just bursting to get free, you know? Yeah, I know how to slow them down. And the deal is that as soon as you can get away from that excessive concentration on self, you start to have gigantic periods of growth, of wellness, because you're no longer looking at life from terms of what can I get out of it, but what can I put into it. You start taking people to meetings. You start doing very insignificant kind of acts that bring very significant results. When you're doing them, it's like, what has this got to do with me? You know, my wife has left me. My kids are gone. I'm going to jail. You want me to make coffee? You know, like, what's the... I'm sorry, I'm missing it. You know, I'm reaching, I just don't see where it balances out. You know? And says, now you can clean up the ashtrays too. Like, oh, wow, now I'm on a run. You know, like, wow, you didn't tell me about the ashtrays. And what it is you're doing something else, which means you're getting out of God's way. And when I'm out of God's way, God can do his thing. My God is such a gentleman that he never forces himself on me. He just stands there very patiently. You know, the book talks about this continually. It talks about when we become conscious of his presence, we lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We're reborn. It doesn't say he's an absence and we have to go and get him. He's a presence. We're just unconscious to the present. And when we become conscious, it's okay. And then in the 11th step, what do we pray for? Conscious contact. We already have unconscious contact. You know? Yeah, you mean he's there all the time? Yeah, he's there all the time. No kidding. Well, how do I make this conscious?